Welcome to You Are an IP Company podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Our passion is helping entrepreneurs publish, protect, and promote their intellectual property. This podcast is sponsored by Instant IP and Caldwell. And now, get ready for You Are an IP Company.
Hey, I brought two of my fantastic friends together, and we are going to chat about IP today. This is co-host Katie Rubino, and this is Tony. He's back for another one, Tony D'Angelo. And Tony, it was a blast last time we recorded, and you really blew our minds when it comes to kind of that those three things when they approach Mount IP. Yeah. Give us that recap, and then we're going to talk about the mindsets. Hit seven of them quick, and then Katie and I are going to go with you back and forth on how it affects the professional IP world and the practical IP world.
I love it. Katie, it's great to see you. I missed you last time. And listeners and viewers, I think it's really critical that IP is a team sport. You cannot, it's just like Mount Everest. Go climb it alone, you're going to actually fall off that cliff and get your butt fried. So this mindset of just having at least the three, if not more, Sherpas, as I like to say. So you're going to climb a mountain, you need to have Sherpas. Katie's going to come from the IP Esquire, like the attorney, the legal mind. Carrie's coming from the IP entrepreneur and helping you bring that to life. I'm going to come from an IP educator and IP evangelist. That's why. So as Carrie's asked me to do is keep preaching. Right, yeah. Reverend? All right. So let's just recap. You're going to climb this Mount IP. And if anybody out there is from our strategic coach, everything we do, Dan Sullivan said this, he said, all of your intellectual property resides in the DOS of your hero target. Mm. So the DOS that you have, viewer, listener, about your intellectual property, the big dangers that you're facing, we talked about them last episode. I'll hit them real quick. Number one, you start to climb the mountain. You get a little bit higher up Mount IP, and then you hit the first layer around 5,000 feet. It's called IP fog. Hmm. And what happens in IP fog, you don't know that you don't know that you don't know. Because right before you were at base camp, you hit the very first one, first danger, and that's IP ignorance. And so this is why you want to continue. Read the book, You're an IP Company. You want to listen to Katie talk about IP. You want to see Carrie bring it to life. And I encourage you to listen to the Intellectual Capitalist Show so you can basically chip away at IP ignorance so that that fog begins to diminish. Because as you get top, we're almost to the peak, the last big D that you run into is the IP gap. And anybody with Strategic Coach knows what we mean by IP gap. You focus on the horizon and you don't look back. So in other words, you came to a coach session, you heard the word patent, and then you got instantaneous IP paralysis because you're like, I'm not an inventor. I don't have it. No, you do. Absolutely do. Yeah. And we'll talk about that as you talk about the mindsets. So those are the,
Katie would call that patentees.
Right. Yeah. And that's true, Tony. Yeah. Because I think a lot of times entrepreneurs get almost intimidated by patents or just intellectual property in general, because it's this area that seems very complex. And if you don't have experience with it, you don't maybe know where to start. And I love this idea of this mountain you've talked about here, because that's a very great way to frame it up.
Yeah. I love it.
And I think back to what you said, there's a fourth danger. Now the first three are internal. The fourth danger, and this is why I love the work that we're all doing, this last danger actually is an external, it's a systemic, and it comes from our educational system, and no disrespect, it comes from the legal system. Now, not all lawyers or attorneys, but in this case, Caldwell, and what Katie's able to do, she doesn't do this, but it's called IP arrogance. It is helping, it's treating that this subject matter is some sort of like superior thing. It's codified in the Constitution. It's in the original script. Now, the reason why we don't know this and we get intimidated by that is because of the lack of IP education. And if you can go, and I literally have personally been in the past 30 years to 25 US colleges throughout North America. And I will tell you, even at the greatest, finest institutions of business, you go to Wharton, you go to, maybe you're going to get three or four courses on intellectual property, if any. So just going to Carrie's classes, being involved in this series, it really helps you, again, eliminate that ignorance, that fog, that gap, and also that basically that arrogance. So you're the right place at the right time, listeners and viewers, for that mindset.
That's
so
great.
My first suggestion is, all right, what do you do next? Well, you got to adopt the 7 mindsets of an intellectual capitalist. I can go into those, but I'll pause there and throw back a little bit, Carrie and Katie. It is a conversation. I'd love to know your thoughts.
No, this is good. Katie, I think if he just rifles off the 7 and then we can respond. What do you think?
You ready? All right, yeah. Here we go.
Sorry.
Go.
Cut off for a second there for
no,
me.
No problem. He's gonna rifle off the 7.
The 7 mindsets.
And then you and I'll jump in.
Yeah, you tell me which one you want me to hit and why. We'll go for it and we'll kick it around a little bit. Okay. So what's really cool, listeners, viewers, it all begins with IP. So there's 7 mindsets. IP, of course, means 2 areas, intellectual property, but also intangible property, which we'll get a little bit into. Because not everything that is intangible property is intellectual property, but everything that is intellectual property is intangible property.
All right,
and you want to have a whole kind of mindset around that. It's really critical. But at the core, the foundation, you know, legally, as Katie will remind us, it's about the IP, baby. It's about the property. So number one rule is IP is that. It is property. Property means exclusive right. Number two, IP is the only asset class that's codified in the U.S. Constitution. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 8. People read scripture every day. I read scripture and the Constitution, and we'll talk about that because it's such a powerful passage. It's just like if you read Psalms, be still and know that I am God. Mm. If you're an entrepreneur or a creator and you read Article 1, Section 8, Clause 8, it's only 3 lines, which we can share. You will be blown away by what the founders, the inventors of our country came up with. So that's the second one. Number three is IP is always changing with the times and with the technology. That's why, Carrie, your blockchain capability that you have introduced to the entrepreneurial community, in what year did you bring that to bear?
Officially, Katie and I got the patent in 2023.
Okay.
Yeah, 2023.
So it's 2025, listeners. So for the next 75 years, the Bitcoin smart contract instant IP that Carrie's developed probably will become the WWW of the 21st century. And you want to be mindful. So what's really cool, you can go back, we go all the way back to, I mean, it goes back to ancient Greek, right, IP, but bring it to more modern times. We can go to Venice when they had the city states, but really we're talking English UK law. So the first trademarks are about 1620s, which was the Statute of Monopolies. So that's where they come from, and we'll talk about here in the U.S. 1790, of course, is when they became codified in the Constitution. Okay. So as the times change, just like back in the day, we didn't have domains. All right. In the future, you're like, oh, I have a smart contract. So that's why you want to be privy and tuned into all this. All right. The next, number four, is IP is the 5th asset class.
Okay.
It is an asset class. In other words, specifically, and one of the other people we've got to have, Tom Wheelwright, in here. Tom's a brilliant accountant. He's the accountant of Robert Kiyosaki, the number one personal finance author of all time, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And Robert's famous for his financial statement and showing the income, asset, and liability. Asset, IP is an asset. It goes on your financial statement. So I have IP on my financial statement, which leads us to number five, is that if you look at the valuation, which we all know this, and we have Caldwell to thank us for this innovation, is that now here we are in 2025, IP comprises over, 90%, Katie, of the S&P 500 valuation? This is, I want to make that distinction. So in that, it's not just IP in the context of intellectual property, trademarks, copyrights, and patents, but it's also intangible property, which is a critical component. So like a domain, technically, that's an intangible property. It's property. I buy and sell it. I can trade it. So that's why you want to think of this big bucket of intangible property, as well as then in specifically in intellectual property. And the last two are that IP is comprised of 8 types. So just like any asset class, so if we are looking, this is property, like I own real estate and you could own commercial real estate, you could own residential real estate. Intellectual property has 8 different types that we focus on. First and foremost would be the smart contract. You've got domains, you've got copyrights, you've got trademarks, trade dress, you've got patents, you've got trade secrets, and you've got this last area, which I call educational capitalism. So knowing that, and then you figure out what in the asset class, what are you really good at? Like if you're into real estate and you're great at trailer parks and you own mobile home parks, I know multi-millionaires who own mobile homes and they own the whole park. So it's an asset play, and you want to look at it that way and know that you can find your niche in this space. And last but not least, what every intellectual capitalist does is, we've all heard it as entrepreneurs, right? When lemons, Carrie, when life gives you lemons, what do?
Make lemonade.
Yeah, but if you're really smart, you go talk to Katie so she can actually have you write down the recipe, patent the recipe, and sell the hell out of the recipe.
Right? Yeah, there you go.
So, and you can do that with each of the 8 types of intellectual property, of IP. So wow. Those are it. Those are the 7. I will take a breath and allow you to get back here.
Katie, what do you, first of all, I'll let you just jump in. What are your thoughts on what Tony shared?
Yeah, I think, Tony, what's interesting to me is your point about not all intangible assets, not all IP is necessarily intangible assets, because I think that's an interesting thought, because a lot of times companies and entrepreneurs are so busy just innovating, and they don't think about all of these unique ideas and creatives that they're creating. And I think that's just issue number one, to really bridge the gap for how can companies add value to their business, is to really start to identify what is it even that we're doing, what have we created? Because when you're really working in the technology day in and day out, you think, oh, these maybe minor tweaks to something that your competitors are doing are not novel or huge. But a lot of times that leads to some of the largest jumps in innovation, because it's those small changes you've contemplated and figured out that lend to some of the greatest ways to advance technology the quickest.
Yeah.
And I'm going to play dumb today. I'm gonna put my listener hat on and say, hey, you need to help the layperson, both of you. What does that mean? Everything is blank, but everything's not blank. What, explain that again, because again, there's people who, this IP is a language, and some people are just learning the very first syllables. So what do you mean by that, Tony or Katie?
Katie, you go first. You're the counselor.
I'll let you go, because you're the one bringing this.
Well, you know, let me bring it back to why we're even having this conversation. So it'll go back to the first two mindsets. Number one, IP is property.
Right.
What does property mean? Property means you have the exclusive right. Now, we could go biblical or we could go constitutional. I love to go both. But if you actually look at the Bible and read Genesis in the original, so 6,000 years ago, basically in the book of Genesis is where we have the first inkling of property rights through the covenant, when God talks to Abraham and says, listen, quit being a nomad. Just have faith in me. Plant your seed here and cultivate the land. See, God gives you the provisions, but you bring your vision to it to make it better. And so this is where contract, exclusive right, property rights come from. Now, jump ahead into intellectual property. Here we are original subjects of the crown. So we're going to use English law. Remember, I said the statute of monopolies. Back in the day, a patent was a letter's patent means it was like, you get privy because you're my buddy, like you're my sister's cousin and I'm the king. Hey, Katie, you like to make candles? Nobody can make candles except Katie Candle Company. And because she's my sister-in-law, she gets the privy to do it. Now, this is going on all the time. This is the great breakthrough in America. So in 1790, all right, actually it's in 1780s when the Constitution is being created, they're having to think about, all right, we're going to create a country that is going to be based on individual property rights.
Okay.
And that's the big change. So let's go right to the Constitution. Let's read that little passage, because it's profound if you really read the passage. It says, and this is so Article 1. So what does that mean? There's 3 articles, right? There's the Congress, there's the executive branch, and then there's the courts. So this is not an addendum to the Constitution. It's an Article 1. It's like right in the beginning. Matter of fact, the first piece of legislation in 1790 at George Washington's inaugural address, he says, listen, brothers and sisters, we got to pass this copyright and patent act. We didn't have trademarks till about 1870. Hmm. So he said, and so in that, it's Article 1, Section 8, Clause 8. Right, also, too, Congress has the power to create armies and navies and court systems. Also, you have the power to, quote, promote the progress of science and useful arts. So that's the inventors and that's the artists. Go back. It's 1790. As we know from Dan Sullivan, we didn't have the word entrepreneur until about 1806. So even the original inventors or business owners, they weren't entrepreneurs. They were called merchants and they were called inventors. So this is that language at the time. We catch up later when we add the trademark as part of the IP and use the word entrepreneur. We knew what it meant in 1870 years later. Back to the Constitution. So it says to promote the progress of science and useful arts. Science is the patent. Useful arts is the copyright. Now, every entrepreneur out there is promoting something that is useful. Now, what Congress will allow you to do is by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. So as Katie said, you're always making discoveries as an entrepreneur. You're making these new little tweaks and changes. Now, here's the other beautiful part. In the Constitution, I said this earlier, that's the only time in the U.S. Constitution. If you ever get to go to Philadelphia, go see it. It's pretty powerful, the Constitution Center. And you look at the actual document, go online and look it up. It's the only time in the Constitution that the word right, R-I-G-H-T, is used in the original document. That's it. Of course, it's in the Bill of Rights. But that's an amendment. When you can understand, it's just crazy powerful.
I get this so far. But go back to the point where you said every intangible is not IP. Say it again, that little line.
Sure. Well, it's IP, but it's two different levels. One is the big umbrella or the big bucket is intangible property, meaning right. It's not physical. It's not fungible. It's not dirt right. In the ground. Okay. But then in the center point is then you have the intellectual property. So the intellectual property that I would deem, and I always lean to the counselor to kind of back me up on this or disagree, please argue that counselor, as I like to say, is first and foremost the copyright and the patent. Okay. Then the trademark and then the trade dress. The trade dress doesn't come until Lanham Act Truman signed it after 1942, I believe.
Yeah.
And which basically, like in your book, you talk about the smell of Play-Doh, the layout right. of a Starbucks store. Those are all trade dress protections. Anything outside of those four, Carrie, are intangible. So your instant IP.
Right.
That's an intangible, yet right. it's a powerful capability. Domains, they're intangible, but you can buy them, sell them. Matter of fact, now you can lease to own domains. It's just a brand new, again, as Katie's saying, a new innovation that GoDaddy is starting to do. Because you don't want to pay that $25,000 to buy carryo.com.
There you go. So, Katie, trade dress, we got into that a little bit in the book. Help us understand that, because that's pretty interesting. Are you talking about like John Deere colors are trade dress?
Yeah, good question. So, trade dress, it's not a very common form of protection, I would say. It depends on really what area your technology is in, but a lot of times it can protect designs and looks of things. So if you are manufacturing food or drinks and the food is getting dispensed in a unique shaped container, maybe that would be appropriate for trade dress. Or a lot of times if you work in a restaurant and the layout of the restaurant is unique, right? Kind of what it looks like inside, and
that's called a trade dress.
Yeah. Right.
Here's a great example for listeners and viewers. Think auto, and you don't even, that's the power of trade dress. I don't need to show you a picture of it. I can just say it. The shape of the Coca-Cola bottle.
Yeah.
The shape of the Heinz 57 bottle. The shape of the Palm bottle, which is much more in recent times. So those would be great examples of trade dress. And it really gives that differentiating factor. Katie, here's an interesting thing. My son's a big sneakerhead, and I've interviewed a lot of like sneaker attorneys. And and I knew I wore these I literally took my shoe off, listeners, for this episode. This is an Adidas sneaker. So one of the first patent suits was between Adidas and Payless, because Payless did a knockoff brand of this three stripe. But what's happening, because patents, the patents are powerful, yet the fact that the patent, as it says in the Constitution, has a limited time, so they do expire. What new sneaker manufacturers are doing now is they're going for a trade dress because they can continuously renew a trademark. Trademarks are one of the only asset classes that, as long as you constantly renew it, just like as long as you pay your real estate taxes, you can have that piece of property forever. The same is true with a trademark. So that's, I do like for most people, after they get their instant IP, after they get their domain. And of course, always think about the copyright, but the fundamentals, like get that trademark, get the trademark of the name of your business or service. There's 45 different types of trademarks between goods like sneakers as services like educational services or financial services. So the more you can, again, become educated, you will see your IP pathway. It's there. But again, that's why we're here. We're kind of helping you be your IP Sherpas to guide you on this. Again, it's scary, but listen, hey, how many people now have climbed Mount Everest after the first couple hundred thousand have climbed it? I don't know the number, but part of our commitment here is to really first empower you and educate you, you the entrepreneur, to reach out to Katie and say, hey, what is it going to take to file a trademark? What should I be thinking? That patent process that you and Kate,
Keegan,
thank you. Lots of K's for me today. That you came up with is it's such a beautiful path and plan. Mm-hmm. I mean, that in itself is a patented process, in my opinion. But what an educational pathway.
Here's a question based on what Tony just said. Patent does, you know, like, For the listener who doesn't know about patents, three different types: utility, plant,
and design.
So utility, plant, and design, three types of patents. Who's to say that if Coca-Cola would have wanted, I know there's reasons probably you both can share why, but fine. What if they said to the Coca-Cola bottle, we don't want a trademark, trade dress, the bottle. We want a design patent. Would that have been a strategy to say, because we're going to license that bottle shape to others, so that's why we go the patent route versus the trade dress route? Is that the distinction?
Yeah, good question. You could still license the trade dress, so that's still an option, but sometimes design patents, they're only good for a term of 15 years. So if you want to have exclusivity for longer, there's sort of some elements of trade dress that overlap with design patents. So if that's the case, sometimes it might be a smarter business decision to get the trade dress, because you can have kind of that protection on it a little bit longer than you would with a patent.
Whoa, this is deep right now. Why would somebody, I mean, because the average person would be like, oh, patents are more expensive, take longer, trade dress, I could go faster. And you're saying renew them forever, like you and Tony said. But is there other benefits of going the patent route also? Yeah. That's the monopoly thing.
Like, yeah, you know, you're going to have that exclusive right. And it's important to remember too, really with both forms of protection, the thing with trade dress and design patents is they're not like a utility patent where you can get very broad scope of protection. Mm-hmm. They're very pointed protection on the thing exactly as it is. So any kind of deviation from it, it's hard to enforce against that. So that's where kind of the patent can sometimes give a little bit broader swath of protection there, because by virtue of the patent, you can file additional patents to capture kind of updates to the design and the look.
And that's the
patent. There can be advantages and disadvantages to both.
I would look at from the, so again, I'm an intellectual capitalist. I'm not only just looking at property, I'm looking at creating an asset. So if you actually look at what has the greatest level of statute, more in like court cases and ultimately like damages, like where's the money? That's what I pay attention to. So because patents are so old, there's so much case law around those. So that I would look at it from that when I'm like, where am I going to spend my IP money? First, what's the quickest ROI? But also if I have to. Now, again, remember, I think this is essential. And I was talking to an entrepreneur. In the Constitution does not say we're going to give people the right of their exclusive right to protect and sit on it. And it doesn't say that. It says to make progress. It says specifically to promote the progress of science and useful art. See, the ultimate goal, the ultimate outcome is to license your, I secure it. It's yours, but don't be greedy. See, go back biblical. God didn't say sit on the land and don't let anybody else have any other land. No, he said, be a model of possibility for humanity and we will expand. And you can see from 1790 to today, like this hockey stick of just massive prosperity that you, I mean, think about this. Grover Cleveland, right? It's Cleveland. His son in 1924, less than about 101 years ago, died because he's playing tennis in the White House. And because there was no patent for antibiotics at the time, there was no innovation at the time. The son of the president died within a week from playing tennis in the front of the White House. This whole idea is, yes, you want to have the exclusive right to protect and defend your property. That's why we have property, right? But you also want to move it forward. You want to progress it. You want to license it. This is the real truth. You want to get, like Carrie, we talked about Amazon. That's a book license. So what Katie is allowing, Katie and Keegan and Caldwell do is they help you build your empire in the cloud. It is your idea. It is your useful idea, your invention. They know how to help you put the stakes in the ground and go to the courthouse, in this case, the trademark office or the patent office or the copyright office, to say, we're going to file this deed, this exclusive right, so that you, Mr. Dr. Carey, have the right to, it's a property right. You can license it. You can sit on it. But listen, if you sit on it, other people are going to. So what you want to ultimately do is create a friction-free way where people can license that idea. And that's why matter of fact, most of the great people think Edison, he's a great inventor. He was not a great businessman. Matter of fact, Henry Ford gave him millions and millions of dollars throughout the years, said he is a brilliant inventor, but a terrible businessman. And so if you actually then look and particularly go back and look at whether it's Singer and the Sewing Machine, and you got the sewing machine wars of the 1850s, you got the Goodyear Company, right? Goodyear created the unique process, the patented process for vulcanization of rubber. He didn't start the company. The guy was crazy. He was absolutely, he would walk around in rubber. Matter of fact, his patent application was filed in rubber. But 25 years later, in honor of his brilliance as an inventor, some entrepreneurs came and bought the trademark to Goodyear, used the process, and now we know as the Goodyear Company.
Wow.
So, there's so much, like all this, like this phone, all right, when did the iPhone come out? Everybody knows 2000 and what?
Seven. Is it seven? Yeah.
Yeah. But when was it patented? It was patented in 2003. Why? Steve Jobs wasn't just sitting there in Cupertino going, haha, I'm the only one with an iPhone. No, he's trying to figure out, all right, how am I going to do this business deal with AT&T? How am I going to get this music? He's thinking all the business iterations, but he had to first, he needed to have the exclusive right. Hence the patents.
Interesting.
So when we begin to see that this is a seed, just like, again, go back to the covenant. I'm going to give you a seed.
Right.
God gives you these ideas. God doesn't, they don't come, as you say, Carrie, they don't come from you. They come to you. They come through you. Now, if you let that idea die on the vine, that's your loss. But I encourage you to let it come out and then talk to an IP attorney. Talk to Katie's office. Katie, how does somebody contact you?
Oh, yeah. If you just go to our website, caldwelllaw.com, you can submit a form and we'll direct you to the right person.
Go, just throw that little seed in the safe, and it's a safe embrace space. That's why you do want to have, you need a team, because as I'll say over and over again, if you don't have an IP strategy for your intellectual property, I promise you, you will come into contact
with an
entrepreneur who has an IP strategy for your intellectual property. So that's why you want to do it.
All right. So we got to land the plane. This was fantastic. Here's my prediction, Katie, that Tony should write a IP book, but with a historical bent. What do you think?
Yeah, I love that. Tony, you really have a great depth of knowledge on the history of IP.
I think so.
A lot of stuff you talked about, I had no idea. Today.
Oh, there's so much more, and it's so cool. That's why I'm an IP evangelist. But I appreciate that, Carrie, and I think it's important, though, is that, yes, you can read, but what I encourage you all to do, listeners and watchers, again, keep getting educated. And yes, I'm working on the book, The Intellectual Capitalist, Carrie. Don't worry. But I'm going to need the legal lens, so I'm going to need some co-authorship here, please. I'm looking for help and support. But the real piece of the puzzle is move the seed forward. It was given. I was at, you pray. We all, you listeners, do you pray yes or no? And if you said yes, guess what? God talks back to you. God will speak through you, through your spirit through the ideas. It is now your job to take that idea, that seed, and bring it to fruition. It is in your divine God right to actually do that. And the beautiful part, you got a team of people who can make that vision an actual reality. So this has been a blast. I appreciate
it. Well, Tony, thank you so much. You are one of the most, I think that's a good term, IP evangelist. And that's a good term for you.
And so, I will help you all become born again.
There you go. And tell us one more time where people can find out more about you.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. So, of course, anywhere you stream podcasts, go to the Intellectual Capitalist Show. That's step one. Step two, if you're really curious, you want to have a conversation, go to the specific domain. Look, I'm walking the talk using the IP. Go to the domain www.theipconversation.com. Theipconversation.com. There, I'll give you a link. We can set up. And even I find people who say, even when I do the intake form, it actually gets me thinking about my bigger future with my IP. That would be my next step to share with you. And if it makes sense, then you become a member and we take you up Mount IP through the IP Sherpa series, which we'd love to do. But right now, podcast, and then go to link and have the IP conversation with me.
All right. Tony, thanks so much for being here. Katie and I are going to go run a IP workshop.
Beautiful. So
take care, everybody.
All right. Thank you all.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to You Are an IP Company Podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Visit instantip.today and caldwelllaw.com for more help on your IP journey. Remember, your ideas are valuable. Protect them today.